It's a little bit of a different feel from January 14th, 2013 to this sixth day of September 2013. The mood has been altered. Yes, on a Bud Light Football Friday here on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. Bud Light, the official beer sponsor of the NFL. Here we go with hour number two, 303-228-1043-295-88. On the Total Beverage text line, Adam Meyer from RealMoneySports.com joined us in the first hour. The great Terrell Davis in the first hour talking about Denver's resounding 49-27 pasting of the Baltimore Ravens last night at Sports Authority Field at Mile High. Great line from Don Banks in an Inside the NFL SportsIllustrated.com column this morning, talking about how the Broncos, going back to late afternoon, early evening, January 12, 2013, had to be thinking about this game, the rematch to come against the Ravens. To get where they want to go this season, filled with urgency, with the clock ticking on the unique opportunity that is the team's Peyton Manning era, Denver would have to go through big, bad Baltimore and put its painful late-game playoff meltdown firmly in the past. Mission accomplished resoundingly. Call it redemption, call it revenge, call it the need to expunge a bitter taste from their mouth. Manning and the Broncos, in Thursday night's slightly delayed NFL season opener, had week one motivation level far above average, and they acted on it. They produced, they reacted well. You had a win, and you had style points last night. And I don't normally adhere to the notion that you make statements or send messages with particular game performances. But if you're looking around and you're on the Broncos schedule between now and the end of the regular season, you're looking at what took place last night. You got to be saying, we're in a little trouble here. I'm not sure what they do is stoppable. Whether they can run the ball or not, I'm not sure that we can stop them or even hope to contain them for four full quarters. You got to remember, the Broncos didn't score a point in the first quarter last night. They only had 14 at halftime. And you thought by the end of the game, when he had 35 in the second half, could have been 55. Or at least 42, if Danny Trevathan isn't watching himself on the scoreboard, that is. 303-228-1043-295-88 on the Total Beverage text line. We'll get your text reaction as we move along during this hour. Dr. Rick Perea will join us at the bottom of the hour. We continue on the phones with Michael. You're on the Fan with Sandy Clef. Good morning.
Hey, Sandy, good morning. I wanted to address this last caller. And first of all, on the Danny Trevathan deal, I just wanted to ask you and your listeners, what is the difference between Danny Trevathan making a bonehead play like he did,
right,
getting put on blast, and Wes Walker, who's an all-pro, a veteran, making the same bonehead play by attempting to field a punt, and nobody says anything?
Well, I'll answer your question. It's very simple. Attitude, and one being a mistake of commission, a physical mistake, and another being a mistake, as it were, of omission, forgetting to take the football those final couple of yards on into the end zone with you. And also, I think, as the caller pointed out, and as some both on the text line and on the phones did last night following the game, the fact that Welker did not try to rationalize or explain, and Trevathan apparently tried to argue with Jack Del Rio on the sideline about it, or give him some kind of explanation for an inexplicably dumb mistake.
And see, I'm not trying
to say
Danny Trevathan in the sense that the play wasn't a bonehead play. I'm not trying to defend that part of it.
But what dropping a punt is not a bonehead play. It's a turnover.
Well,
it's a mistake. It's a physical error. It is a mistake of commission.
It's a mental error. I think everybody would agree to that.
In the sense, in the very narrow sense, that he shouldn't have fielded the punt. But there's also a lot of irony involved. Why was he back there? Why was Welker back there in that situation?
I don't care why he was back there.
No, but answer my question. Just humor me. You're the one who brought it up.
They don't trust Holiday. That's why. They don't trust Holiday.
Exactly.
That's why.
Exactly.
Okay.
And maybe they outsmart. Hold on. Then maybe let's actually talk this out instead of just yelling at each other. Let's kind of talk this out. Okay, so would it be reasonable to say that while it was Welker's mistake, maybe the Broncos outsmarted themselves a little bit, huh?
It would also be reasonable to say that Danny Trevathan made a hell of an interception, but nobody has said that.
Right.
Everybody is pointing. Yeah,
because, and whose fault is that? Whose fault is that?
Whose fault is that? It's a hell of a
point. No. Whose fault? You made a point. You said you found fault with the analysts and those reacting by saying he's not getting any credit for the interception he made. He made a hell of a play. And I'm asking you, whose fault is that he is being denied such credit? It's his fault, isn't it? No. Give me an answer.
You're going to let me answer.
Whose fault is it?
It's whoever's reporting that side of the story.
No, you're wrong. It's his fault. It's his fault. Which I think was the point that Jack Del Rio was trying to make. It's your fault. There's no excuse. There's no explanation. There's no rationalization. A teammate was injured on the play, caller. Are you aware of that? Let's talk this out. If you're going to challenge me or challenge other people commenting, that's fine. But you have to participate in the conversation. You just can't make assertions. I answered your question. You answer my question. Now, I give you credit for answering the question, but it's preposterous. If he isn't getting credit for the interception he made, that's his fault. And by the way, if you listened at least to my take on the Fan Football postgame show last night, I said, you know what the real shame of it was? He had otherwise not a good game, a great game, Trevathan. Whose fault is it that we're talking about that play rather than the otherwise terrific game he played? It's Danny Trevathan's fault and no one else's. 10:13, Sandy Clef with you. On a Bud Light Football Friday, this is your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL. Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan. 10:19 on a Bud Light Football Friday here on Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan. Your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL. I get that there will be a backlash to the backlash, and I only ask that people listen to all that we're saying about the Danny Trevathan play last night. And I didn't spend an hour on the Fan Football postgame show, or an hour and 15 minutes, I guess it was last night, from about 10:45 to midnight. We didn't spend the entire 75-minute stretch talking about Danny Trevathan last night. And when we did, we put it, all of us, into context. It's Danny Trevathan's first National Football League start. Thought he had a terrific game. We don't detract from his performance by bringing up that play. He did that. And I'm glad his words after the game were ones of apology and accountability, but people saw what they saw on national TV, and obviously Jack Del Rio's reaction was crystal clear and readily apparent, but it was equally clear, while I wouldn't go as far as the caller a few minutes ago went in making a judgment on exactly what Danny Trevathan said, he did talk back to him to the point where Jack Del Rio's reaction was one of dismissing whatever he was hearing coming from Danny Trevathan. basically shut up and listen, basically bullspit. Whatever he was hearing from Danny Trevathan, he characterized as bullspit. And you don't have to be an expert lip reader to discern that. 303-228-1043, 295-88, Total Beverage Text Line. Reed, you're on the Fan with Sandy Clef. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking the call, Sandy.
Certainly.
I don't want to be a Debbie Downer. It was a great game yesterday. But I do have a problem with us not finishing games the right way. I would think we would have learned from last year in the Ravens game, going three and out on three straight runs and obvious run formations, that we would be more dynamic. I'm just wondering if you could talk about that.
It's funny. I remember doing post-game shows back in the 1980s, the first full year I did a Bronco post-game show. Dan Reeves was the head coach, and it was Dan's first year. It was 1981.
Mm-hmm.
And, people would kill Reeves on the post-game talk shows, win or lose, for running the ball too much. And last night we were getting a lot of reaction after the game was over. Yeah, but the running game didn't show me very much tonight. You got to run the ball to win, even though in today's game you really don't. And now we get your reaction. And your reaction apparently was the same one that struck those in attendance. You could hear the grumbling and the booing during that stretch and into the following sequence when on first and second down, they only picked up minimal yardage. I think there was one drop on a pass play with Decker, if I'm not mistaken, if memory serves.
Yeah.
Okay, so they got third and eight, and they throw the quick screen to Thomas, and of course he breaks it for the 78-yard touchdown, and the Broncos go back up by 22 points at 49-27, and we all live happily ever after. Well, it seems they're almost damned if they do and damned if they don't. They scored 49 points last night. They threw for seven touchdown passes. No one back, in spite of some efforts to convince me otherwise, that they had featured No'Shawn Moreno last night. No back, you heard Terrell Davis in the last hour talking about this, no back carried the ball even as many as 10 times for Denver last night. That's the way it's going to go. So, yes, they ran the ball, you're right, with a 15-point lead, three straight times, and, yeah, people started to get a little nervous. Although, I think they were up by 18, actually, when they did that, and they punted back, and Baltimore came down and kicked the field goal. In any case, last night, they ran 68 plays. 23 were rushing plays, and 45 were passing plays. So, they did throw the ball two times out of three, in a game that, at least in the second half, they basically led through most of the half by huge margins. They ran the ball 23 times, and believe me, I understand the context of your question and your observation here, but you're going to kill him for running the ball one time out of every three plays in a game they won by 22 points?
I honestly, I do not have a problem with them running the ball. My problem was with them in obvious run situations, running the ball. I mean, they can at least set up, even in their three wide or two tight end set, without having a wing formation, saying, we're going to run the ball. We're not even trying to fool you at all. And then we go nowhere. Three straight times.
But this gets us back to the Danny Trevathan deal. We all know that the score at that point is 49-17, right? And that happens in the first 5 minutes of the fourth quarter. So in that context, if it's 49-17 or even 49-24 with 5.5 minutes to go, and they're doing that, are you calling me today and complaining about they're running the ball three times?
Look at the Patriots. The Patriots, they have a mentality that they don't let their foot off the gas. They just keep on going. And we seem to let our foot off the gas when we're up. Just like in the Ravens game last year, we're up, we're going to let our foot off the gas, we're just going to run this thing out.
But as we spoke within the last hour with Terrell Davis, I agree with you. I think he, reluctantly perhaps, agrees with you that the game now is played in a fashion that allows for, even when you get the lead, even when you're leading big, throw it more. Keep going. Keep attacking. I think you're right in identifying that as the prevailing philosophy. You're absolutely right. And I think that's what you'll see from the Broncos. And yes, they ran the ball three times and punted. Then on first down in the following series, they ran it on first down. They threw it on second. Decker dropped the ball. And at that point, Michaels and Collinsworth are talking, it's just starting to get a little bit interesting. It's third and eight. Their lead is 15. Still more than 5 minutes to go in the game. And all of a sudden, there's the quick pass to Thomas. In effect, a running play. As he caught the ball, as I remember, am I right on this? Didn't he catch the ball at the line of scrimmage or behind the line of scrimmage, Thomas, on that play? Or slightly ahead, maybe slightly ahead. In other words, the 78-yard touchdown pass was mostly a run. So, in effect, it was kind of an extended running play. But listen, I get your point. I think that's the mentality. I think you'll continue to see it throughout the year. Get the lead by passing, and even with a big lead, press home the advantage and pass some more. It ain't the football that you grew up with, that I grew up with necessarily, although the passing game, I think, has always been central to scoring a lot of points in the history of the game. It's a different kind of game, though, now. And, yes, I think the Broncos are fully acclimated to that kind of game and fully prepared to go ahead playing it. 1028 on your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL. Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3. The Fan. Stay with us. Rick Perea coming next. Dr. Rick Perea is set to join us now on this Bud Light Football Friday on The Fan, 303-228-1043. We'll get to more of your phone calls, 29588 and the Total Beverage text line. Dr. Rick Perea, professor of sports psychology, Metro State University of Colorado. And we were talking earlier, Dr. Perea, we brought you in for the first time. I know it wasn't January 14th, it wasn't the following Monday, but it was during that week following the most crushing of Bronco playoff defeats, I think, even going back and including the Jacksonville game following the 1996 season in the divisional round of the NFL playoffs. And you spoke at length that day and on many occasions since about that game. Ask you first, right off the top, how much repair work did the Broncos get done? Is that game now and the memory of it completely expunged from player consciousness, coach consciousness, fan consciousness, or is it just a good start in the healing process?
I like the latter. I think it's a great start.
Yeah.
I think that this saga, if you will continue, because I will predict these two teams will meet again later in the season. I'll tell you that. So I think the saga continues. But I do think the Broncos took a big step towards minimizing the psychological effect on this team. I think if the Broncos lose this game yesterday and lose it in a fashion perhaps being dominated, you know, in a systematic way, this could have really affected their team efficacy, their team belief system. But I think by what they did yesterday, they took a big step in minimizing the talk around here about the Ravens, at least for the regular season. But once we get back into the postseason, I suspect that these teams may meet again. And at that point, we'll have a real test on, you know, the Broncos will have a real test on their hands in terms of not only their physiological competencies, but their psychological competencies in order to overcome that step in the playoffs.
But it was a big performance last night in both respects.
Oh, absolutely.
Quantitative, qualitative, that you talk about all the time in those aspects. Denver, particularly in the second half, was overwhelming.
Yes, and I've already talked to Ryan Jensen, who's their sixth-round draft choice for the Ravens, a guard who's I talk to on a regular basis. He's a local product out of Colorado.
Absolutely.
And he talked to me about how this defeat had a big effect on him last night. He said, you know, there's people walking around kind of shaking their head at each other. So I think the saga will get more interesting as we go along, but this first step did a lot towards establishing a team efficacy that the Broncos can carry through into the regular season and postseason.
We'll get you right into the heart of the conversation and continue on the phones, and we'll get your texts as well and get Dr. Puria's reaction to what you're thinking and saying on this football Friday morning. David, you're on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan with Sandy Clough and Dr. Rick Puria. Good morning.
Well, good morning, Sandy. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well. I wasn't going to start out this way, but I got to say, in the years that I've listened to you, it always amazes me you get a caller that can't seem to do the give and take, can't seem to answer a simple question. And I'm like, I'm sitting there listening, trying to answer it for him. So come on, man. Sandy's asking you a simple damn question. Just answer it. And they just seem to want to fight. So hopefully you ask me some questions. I'll
give
you simple answers.
All right. You want to talk about the Trevathan deal, and I know Dr. Puria wants to weigh in on that. You've heard what I had to say. I want to know what you have to say, and I certainly want to know what Dr. Puria has to say about it. So go right ahead.
Well, I agree. Trevathan screwed up, but to me it doesn't take away from the great game that he had. And I guarantee if he gets another pick six, he's going to take that ball all the way back to the sideline and hand it to Jack, and Jack's going to say, good job. You can learn.
I think you would expect that would be the response the next time. But I think this is what Dr. Puria bothers people most about that. Yes, there was the mistake, and you're like, I didn't even notice it on first blush because they cut away so quickly, and then they went back to the replay, and you could see it wasn't even close. He wasn't closer than maybe a yard and a half, 2 yards in the end zone, and he drops the ball. So it's an obvious call, and we all know what followed. But I think what bothered a lot of people about it was the exchange on the sideline and the fact that he seemed to talk back to Del Rio after Del Rio had first admonished him. And David, I want to get your take on that, too. In the aftermath of the play, it seemed like he was still trying to rationalize it.
Well, you know, what I do is I really study the person's face. And I was studying Trevathan's face while Jack is yelling at him.
Yeah.
And he's making excuses,
right.
It looks like. He felt embarrassed.
Yes.
And Jack was doing him a favor, yelling at him like that, so it doesn't happen again. So I think all that's fine. He felt embarrassed. He felt stupid. I mean, it was a really electric atmosphere out there. I thought that opening day for the NFL was totally awesome. I'm glad we hosted it.
Yeah.
it was really cool. And, you know, so he was just caught up with emotion, but, you know, the mistakes made. What I wanted to ask you before you have to let me go, I was really happy that the Broncos, C.J. Anderson, made the cut. And he impressed me the most of all the running backs in the preseason. I was like the one game I was thinking I'm seeing T.D. again. And I want to know your thoughts on him once he heals up. I'm hoping they bring him in. If John, you're listening, bring CJ in.
All right. The running back situation we will get to because that's a fascinating aspect of this team going forward right now. But first, Dr. Puria, I want to get your reaction to Trevathan.
Well,
in the play last.
Yes, the behavior that he exhibited is both understandable and unacceptable. So from one perspective,
I like that.
It's unacceptable because, you know, football players are honestly a reflection of our society at large. And the game has changed. We all know that. We've talked about that schematically and the way it's structured. But it also has changed from the personality of players that are now playing. So there is less structure and discipline in pro football than there was 20, 30 years ago. Absolutely across the board. And so one of the things I, you know, when I was in college, I've picked up fumbles and ran them in for touchdowns, and I know what that feels like, but you have to be systematic. You have to cross the goal line first. That's the object. You've got to cross the goal line, and then if you're going to do your dance or whatever you're going to do, which when I was in college, we weren't allowed to do any of that because our defensive coordinator told us, if you do score, you score, act like you've been there before, and hand it to the official.
Right.
So without, you know, with the players now being a reflection of our society, what's happening often now are players are thinking that they're entitled to be able to dance or do whatever they want. And I guess it's pretty cool to look like you're just dropping the ball casually as you cross the goal line. But it's really a reflection on not really focusing and paying attention to the relevant cues and filtering out the irrelevant cues. In terms of his interaction with Jack Del Rio, I would say this. You know, Jack's the defensive coordinator.
Yep.
He played. He was a linebacker. Played with fire. You know, that's really not the man you want to get fired up at. I mean, you don't want to flat-out fight on the sidelines. But he needs to understand this guy's been there. He's done it. He understands that there needs to be structure. And I honestly believe that he's one of the few defensive coordinators in the league that has somewhat, you know, a semblance of structure. Because there are some defensive coordinators, offensive coordinators in the league that don't have very much structure or discipline over their players. Simply because of the increased salaries and all the structure, there's a lack of structure that's going on.
So you think on the sideline in that situation, he's the right guy to be speaking to Danny Trevathan, not the linebackers coach Richard Smith, not the head coach John Fox, but Jack Del Rio.
Absolutely, because
given his position and the kind of respect he commands within the Bronco organization at the present time.
Yes, when you're the defensive coordinator, generally speaking, even though you have a linebacker coach, you orchestrate that defense, and you are responsible for what happens to your defense, whether it's scored up on or you score. So being that he is an ex-linebacker and he is somebody that played with fire, he understands it's fun to score. But my God, take care of first things first. Cross that goal line. Take care of that. And then you can celebrate. But it's really a reflection of our society. We see it a lot in college football and in pro football, even in high school football. Because as a caller said earlier, you know, these little leaguers, high school, they watch these games and they think, I'm going to do that too. So I think it's unacceptable on that level. But it's understandable because he was very excited, his first start in the NFL game, and his arousal level was probably through the ceiling, which we can talk about later about how arousal affects players' performance, but it was probably through the ceiling, and it was an unintentional mistake.
Yeah, and he's a good kid, which you said over and over again, and it's a terrific story that he and Woodyard, both coming out of Kentucky, and they're two of the premier linebackers in the league when it comes to coverage and making that kind of play. It won't be the last time, I suspect, that Danny Trevathan will have that opportunity. Hopefully, he would handle himself differently the next time. 1044 Sandy Clef, Dr. Rick Perea, our in-studio guest for roughly the next 45 minutes on your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL. Bud Light Football Friday, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. On a Bud Light Football Friday, Sandy Clef with you on Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan, your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL. And, of course, we have Dr. Rick Perea in studio as our guest. We'll get back to the phones. More of your texts, 303-228-1043, 29588 on the Total Beverage text line. The previous caller's question about the running back situation. What's your take on that? If there was any complaint coming out of the game last night, it's, well, they really didn't run the ball very well. And later in the year, and certainly during the playoffs in January, and unpleasant weather conditions, you got to be able to run the ball. That's still an area of concern. The previous caller mentioned C.J. Anderson's return, how much he was looking forward to it. What's your view of the running back situation, the importance of the running game as it plays into the psyche of this team now going forward?
Yeah. Sandy, I think we need to reframe the way we look at the running back position.
Yeah.
We can't compare today's productivity with yesterday's methodology. In other words, today we need to apply today's methodology of what running backs are used for. They're not used for 20, 25, 30 carries a game
anymore.
The
way they were in Terrell Davis's day with the great Terrell Davis, with whom we spoke roughly an hour ago.
Right. They're not used to establish ball control, run the clock, bleed the clock. That's not what they're used for anymore. They're a tertiary mechanism. They're a tertiary tool that complements the pass. So I think that's the first thing. We need to reframe the way we look at them. Second, I think when we look at Denver's running back situation, you have a three-headed monster, obviously, and you have different skill sets in each player. And I think Denver's fortunate to have three players that they can really plug in. So if we're looking to for a front runner or a running back that we can say this is our guy, I don't think that's really going to happen. But I think that's a good thing, because as a defensive coordinator, when you game plan for that offense, you have to think about three different skill sets. And doing such is really puts pressure. You know, when we talk about how offenses have changed just in the last 10 years, in the last 3 years, defensive coordinators, and this is my assertion, my postulation, if you will, defensive coordinators got to become more creative to stop what you saw last night. Sandy, what you saw last night was nothing less than revolutionary. I mean, it really is. Seven touchdown passes in one game, the way he commanded that team in the second half. The defensive coordinator for the Baltimore Ravens must have been literally pulling his hair out and basically guessing what to do. And I call upon defensive coordinators across the nation, they've got to become more creative in the ways to stop these offenses. They can do it through stemming, that's pre-snap movement, you know, moving before the snap of the ball to not give him a read, and that's stemming from the defensive backs, linebackers, and the defensive line, to defenses that are radar defense, where nobody's in a three-point stance and they're moving, and give and dictate back to the offense what the offense is now seemingly dictating
it,
to the defense.
It did appear on one of the touchdown passes, one of the short touchdown passes, as if the Ravens almost gave up.
Yes, I saw it.
In the coverage. And yeah. Collinsworth talked about it.
Yeah. Not only gave up physiologically,
yes.
Sandy, but I'm telling you, psychologically.
Yeah.
Okay.
Looked like they packed it in.
Yeah.
I can't cover this.
And, you know, nonverbal communication is much more reliable than verbal communication, because I can lie to you all day. But my body language speaks volumes. And there were plays where you could see the Ravens flat out gave up. And one of the reasons is, I think, out of frustration. Again, going back to defensive coordinators, how they prepare for offenses like Denver's is really going to be on them to be more creative, because that's what the offenses have done. They've become more creative. They've spread out the defenses. They've made them play, you know, basically open space and made them recruit a different athlete to be able to cover people in space. Well, defensive coordinators need to come back and be creative as well and say, okay, you're going to throw all this at you. We're going to throw a lot at you to think about. And when I look at the Ravens yesterday.
But Manning seemed to outguess them even in that regard. And Collinsworth was talking last night about how they thought they had some of his audible calls.
Yeah. Well,
and he tricked them a couple of times on that. So staying ahead of Manning, you can get as creative as you want, but staying ahead of Manning, a gargantuan challenge.
Right. No, I'm not saying staying ahead of Manning. I'm saying in general of these spread offenses that are giving defenses a lot of problem. I think getting ahead of Peyton Manning is really going to be next to impossible. I won't say impossible.
You were talking during the break about a brand of leadership that he's exhibiting now.
Yeah.
It's unprecedented.
It's unprecedented, Sandy. You know, I'm watching this game last night, and I'm thinking, as a sports psychologist, I'm going to go to a convention later this year in Atlanta, Georgia, for sports psychologists. And we need to really sit down and talk about what we're seeing with Peyton Manning, because it's not just overt leadership, what we can see. It's his nonverbal communication. You know, even the words he speaks, you know, when he's calling his cadence, when he steps up to the line of scrimmage, hurry, hurry. What does hurry, hurry mean? That means something, not only probably in their scheme, but it means something to their players. That's like, we're ready to go, activate, high arousal. I mean, he's one of the few athletes I've ever seen that has a high level of arousal, low level of anxiety. He can think clearly in a pressure situation. He can think not only clearly, but really linear. In a linear fashion, he can direct people. He can
high
put
level
them in the places.
Of I want to get this straight.
Okay.
High level of arousal, low level of anxiety.
Yes.
And he combines the two.
Yeah, which
brilliantly.
Which is unusual, because most people, if they have high levels of arousal,
they're anxious.
Anxious. They attach that mental thought to it. Whereas Peyton Manning is able to regulate his anxiety, but still keep that high level arousal. And it's very contagion. Not contagious, but contagion.
What's the difference?
Well, the difference is people see it, and they literally behave in similar fashions. Okay? It's not written on a piece of paper. They watch it, and they see it. When they see his preparation, his nonverbal communication, did you see him the other night in a preseason game when somebody was running a touchdown, and he's running up the sidelines holding his helmet? He looked like a 15-year-old kid.
On the sidelines. He's not playing. Right.
Those kind of nonverbal messages, Sandy, are contagion, and everybody kind of looks around and goes, golly, we have to perform to a higher level to even be on the same stratosphere as this guy. So I think his leadership, verbal, nonverbal, and cognitive, the way he thinks, is unprecedented, and it's really, for us in the sports psychology world, it's delicious because we're going to get to delineate the impact of leadership on a lot of different levels based on his performance. Now, I know he won't throw 7 touchdowns every week, okay? But I'll tell you this, what I saw last night is really causing me to get those gears turning in my head and really challenge my sports psychology students at the college level and graduate level to think about how impactful his ability to lead human organisms is.
That's Dr. Rick Perea. He'll be in studio with us until 11:30 on this Football Friday morning, a Bud Light Football Friday on your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL. Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.